morning and welcome to MTSU on the Record. I'm Jenna Logue, and we're coming to you from the campus of Middle Tennessee State University in Murfreesboro, Tennessee, and through the auspices of Audiovisual Services and the Learning Resources Center. Arguably, a hospital could be called the heart of any community because its life's blood is literally pumped through it. So with Murfreesboro's Middle Tennessee Medical Center now in a beautiful new building, it only seems fitting that its history be chronicled. From its origins as Rutherford Hospital in 1927, A Time to Build Up uses text and vintage photos in tracing this hospital's development through the decades and several different eras of management and vision. A Time to Build Up is the work of executive editor Susan Greer and Patsy Weiler, both MTSU alumni, and Patsy is here with us today. She's a veteran of years in the newspaper business. She also happens to be the wife of one of my colleagues, Randy Weiler, in the Office of News and Media Relations. It's a gorgeous coffee table, glossy book, Patsy, and thanks for being here. I think you and Susan can justifiably be quite proud of this.
Well, thank you for having me today. And yes, it is something that there's a great deal of pride behind, and we're just very honored to have had an opportunity to present this project to the community, and hope everyone enjoys it.
We'll talk about how to lay one's hands on a copy of the book in due course.
Okay.
But let's start out by talking of if we could establish a timeline to go back to the early years, days of yore. In 1927, when Rutherford Hospital was established, what was the state of public health care in Murfreesboro and Rutherford County like at the time? What were they dealing with when they finally opened their doors to this building that's depicted in the drawings and the photos as sort of a southern plantation style looking house, or a, you know, kind of a country mansion of the era? Did your research indicate to you what it looked like on the inside? Did you find out anything about that?
Yes, we did, and there are some photos in the book that shows a black and white snapshot of what a mother would have experienced in a labor and delivery room, and also just a general medical care room for one of the patients. And that's probably in the, I think, maybe the first or probably second chapter of the book. And it was very clean, but very simple and stark compared to today's standards. In regard to your earlier part of your question about what was the condition of health care in Rutherford County preceding the opening of the hospital, they were very fortunate that the Rutherford County, the precursor to our Rutherford County Health Department, which was the Rutherford County Health Demonstration. It had been set up and was running, and that was so successful here that the gentleman who was over it, which was Dr. Mustard, realized that the county really needed hospital support to provide more detailed health care for patients that they were seeing, because often at that time surgeries were still being done on the kitchen tables and in homes, or patients would have to be brought in from out in the outlying areas if they were not a resident of Murfreesboro, and surgeries would be done in the doctor's office, and sometimes the doctors may have had a few cots for recovery, but also patients even went over to the women's building and club members would care for them. So it was very much in its infancy here as far as health care, and the hospital took it to the next step.
And babies were still being born in homes with midwives.
That's correct.
That kind of thing. In the book there's a picture of the payroll, an early payroll for the hospital, for a total of about $12,000, not counting the director's salary, and at least one of the maids, according to the typed out paper, would actually live in the hospital. I rather like that idea myself.
Well, that was commonplace when the hospital first opened, is that the individual, and in the early days it was a female who was the supervisor of the hospital, had quarters there in the lower part of the building. And another thing that was very special for this hospital, for it not to have a nursing school, was that there was the nursing building, or the nurse's building, really should be called a nurse's residence. And some of the early women that were the hospital supervisors lived in that. There was many of the nurses that lived in it, some of the people that oversaw maintenance that were females lived in that building, and it was finished just a short time in 1927 after the hospital opened. And so you have to keep in mind the time frame in that right after the hospital opened, our country went into the Great Depression. And so it provided a home and a job for nurses and for the superintendent, and that was very important. And it continued, the nurses' residence continued to provide a place of residence for nurses at the hospital. We know up until the late 50s, possibly around 1960 or so, it was a key recruiting tool.
I can remember that even up into the late 50s, early 60s, student nurses often would live in dormitories on the grounds of hospitals across the United States because it just wasn't considered appropriate for young ladies to be living on their own in apartments or in areas where young men could come and go at any and all hours of the evening.
Well, the nurses' residence was definitely not co-op, but often dormitories in situations that you were talking about would be at a major medical center where there may be a nursing school attached to it. And there was early records indicate that there was some hope to actually have a quote-unquote nursing school here with Rutherford Hospital, which is the precursor to Middle Tennessee Medical Center, but it never came to be other than there was some practical nursing training that went on in the early 60s, but not a full-blown degree nursing program.
Right. The MTSU did not have a nursing program itself until 1966, so it could not serve as a feeder for the hospital in terms of personnel in those very early years.
Right.
But there is some cross-pollination between MTSU and MTNC over the years. Just to cite one example, Jennings A. Jones, for whom our College of Business on campus is named, was on the hospital board at one time. So since the normal school existed before the hospital did, can you think of any other instances throughout the hospital's history where MTSU personnel played a great role in MTNC's progress and vice versa?
Oh, I think that there's many examples of cross-pollination, if you will. Early on, Dr. Robison was the chief of staff at the hospital and one of the key players with Mr. Christie, who was the founder of the hospital. And he was involved with MTSU athletics and was the team doctor. You have, of course, modern times, the development of the nursing school. It is the Case and Kennedy Nursing School, and they bear the names of two physicians that were heavily associated with the hospital, and that's Lois Kennedy and John Kaysen. And that's from, they were there the 30s through the 70s, and you have many instances. One of the early superintendents that was her name escapes me at this moment, but she was also a teacher at the normal school, which was the precursor to MTSU. So, yes, from the very beginning, there is a photograph in this book that shows Mr. Christie, who was, as I said, considered the founder of the hospital, on a float to raise money for war bonds in World War One, and he is on a wagon that's in front of, I think, Kirksville, Maine. So, I would say that MTSU and MTMC have been partners in the welfare of this community since the very beginning, and both of them continue to play important roles in the development and the welfare of our community.
When in the hospital's history, how soon were African Americans and women physicians able to make inroads at the hospital?
Well, you know, the hospital led the way in that respect in some manners, because Lois Kennedy did her internship in 1939 and then came back in the early 40s and was a physician at the hospital. She was the first female physician there and worked very much in obstetrics and did some pediatric care. As I said, the first early superintendents of the hospital were all women up until about 1947, when they hired their first male superintendent. And then also, as far as breaking down barriers in the area of racial relationships. The hospital, from early on, cared for black patients and white patients under the same roof. And then the first African-American physician, Dr. Coopwood, was actually hired at the hospital before civil rights legislation was passed. Mm-hmm. So I think that it's more than fair to say that the hospital has always had its doors open for medical opportunities and care opportunities for everyone.
Now, when did the hospital move to the campus over by Bell Street, which is now empty because we have the brand new building that the hospital is in? Something I found interesting in a caption in one of your pictures, the campus over at Bell Street, which is now vacant, has the city of Murfreesboro's first ever elevated crosswalk. Now, I drive under that crosswalk every day to get to work at MTSU, but I did not know that that was the city's first elevated crosswalk.
Indeed it was, and having the opportunity to talk with people that were involved with that, that was quite an exciting time here in Murfreesboro. And Mr. Hastings, who is now retired, he was the president of the hospital at that time. He talked about how that it really drew a lot of attention to the hospital, and in the mind's eye of the public, really elevated it to a very modern status that it had that in. The hospital has always been at the same location from when it opened in 1927 until it just recently moved in October of last year, and it just grew around itself.
And whereas that was just one building, Rutherford Hospital, Middle Tennessee Medical Center on the Bell Street really was a campus because there was a building connected to another building by a crosswalk and a parking garage.
Right.
And then there are doctor's offices several blocks down the road, way down the street. And, you know, basically all of, in that neighborhood, there are several physicians' offices.
Right. It very much was what I playfully in my mind when I was researching, it's kind of like the Lego hospital, in that the different additions were snapped onto it in various different ways. But yes, it grew to encompass a large area in the heart of the city. And I feel like the hospital people looked long and hard to try to continued to grow there, but it just became landlocked. There was no way to grow because you had a historic area around it, and then to grow up to retrofit it on the building was not cost effective to do that because all of the support work was not in place to hold the weight of new additions on top. And it just came to a point where they were just bursting the seams, and we were just been very, very blessed that the tradition and the caring that was so a part of the old hospital continues today in the beautiful new facility.
And at the old Bell Street campus, at the risk of sounding morbid, the cemetery is right down the street. It represents a juxtaposition of images that maybe isn't the world's greatest.
Well, you're laughing, but early research shows that was a great concern of the benefactors from New York City. They had a staff member come down here, and she actually had to climb up in a building two or three stories high, close to where the hospital was, and look over and see if they could see the cemetery, Evergreen Cemetery. And her feeling was, especially when the leaves were on the trees, you really couldn't see it. And it was a stretch to see it when the tree leaves would be bare. And so they were very conscientious in that time that they didn't want it to seem like, ooh, it's too close to the hospital at all. But the hospital's history is very significant in that it was actually a gift to the people of Rutherford County from the Commonwealth Foundation in New York City. And it's only one of four or five hospitals in the country that was gifted to the community from the Commonwealth. And of course, that they opened the doors in 1927 and was governed by a group of a volunteer board of directors. And so that is very historically unique in that aspect. And the same building that was opened in 1927 was still in function at the very last day that the hospital closed.
But that was the first facility to actually bear the name Middle Tennessee Medical Center in the city of Murfreesboro?
It was. That changed under Mr. Arnhart's time of leadership there. And I believe it was It was in the early 80s that changed from Rutherford Hospital over to Middle Tennessee Medical Center. It had grown tremendously under Mr. Arnhart, James Arnhart's direction. And he just felt like it no longer was just a little small rural hospital, that it was evolving into an actual medical center and was serving Middle Tennessee, and which it had from its very beginning. Early records showed that there were a lot of patients that came into Murfreesboro outside of just the Rutherford County. And under his direction, Mr. Arnhart, and then Mr. Hastings, and then under Gordon Ferguson, those are the key presidents from 1954 through 2010, those three men, it really indeed did grow to the medical center that it is today.
That dovetails nicely into my next question. From your interviews, and you did almost 100 interviews.
Yes, that's 90 correct.
Something interviews you and Susan did. How quickly would you say, judging from what people have told you, was the hospital able to keep pace with the emerging medical technologies and the latest in equipment and services? Because things move in this arena, things really move pretty fast, especially in like the last half of the 20th century.
Oh, I think that they were very sensitive to it and very much on key to bring in evolving medical technology. It had an early MRI was early on here into Rutherford County, came through Middle Tennessee Medical Center, and then there was also a second one over at the Bell Street Center. And the demand was so great for it that the Bell Street Center led the way. When we say the Bell Street Center for our listeners, that is a second building that was built next to the hospital itself and part of that campus. There were doctor's offices there and outpatient surgeries services there, but they also put the MRI in the Bell Street building. And part of that reason why is because they were so in tune to the growth that was going on in Rutherford County, particularly during the last part of the night from about 1980 up until we turned over to 2000, that they actually had the MRI services available on hours later than what normal physicians' offices would have been prior to serve the needs of the public. So and then of course they had a women's center, a specific women's center, the women's building, for the care of women and the development of the NICU, and it was under such outstanding reputation there that early on, if there were babies that they couldn't hold at Vanderbilt and they were able to transport them, they would transfer them here to the NICU here for care. So I think MTSU has always had a focus on being progressive, and I think that's come from the 1920s forward. They always were focused on trying to keep on top of the needs and that the community needed here as far as medical services.
You said MTSU. I know you meant MTNC.
Yes,
but
I'm sorry. Well,
we'll take
me.
That compliment too.
Yes, thank you for correcting me. I did mean MTNC. Oh. Too many MTs floating
there
around.
Too many MTs. I know. Now here's the $267 million question.
Okay.
How did the sparkling new Middle Tennessee Medical Center that is now in operation come to fruition?
Well, we touched on that, I think, a little bit earlier, in that as we have continued to grow, we're, as most people who live in this area know, that this is one of the fastest growing communities in the entire state of Tennessee and one of the leading ones in the Southeast. There just was no room to grow at the former location, and they really needed to be able to handle the emergency care services that were being demanded of them.
Life Flight, the helicopter, yeah.
Of course, they had Life Flight, but a lot of people don't realize that. We didn't have a helipad on top of the building. Mm-hmm. It was actually down in a school near the campus school. In the city near the campus school, the helicopter would have to land there, and then they'd have to take an ambulance and carry the patient up to the emergency room. So all those kind of things. And as early as 12 years ago, actually, when Gordon Ferguson, the current president, was a new member of the staff, he and Mr. Hastings realized that they really needed to grow. They were always, Mr. Hastings always was a person that was projecting into the future. And I think that Gordon Ferguson is a very similar type of individual. And so they just realized to grow that they they were going to have to move. And that was a hard decision. But they did indeed sign the intent to move out to the new location soon after the city of Murfreesboro had bought that property in that area. And one thing we touch on in the book is that some people didn't understand why the hospital wanted it to move and why they wanted to move out there when it was just bare land. But of course, they provided the stimulus in many ways. Their step of confidence and belief of putting their future there stimulated that whole area and the development of the parkway there, and has become a new gateway to our city.
But other kinds of businesses
right
around there, the Galleria, the mall, the restaurants,
the
around there,
commerce building, all of that has
and
grown
it's,
since
it's
then.
Close to the interstate as well.
It is, and that was one of the areas that the hospital I think looked at, is that it was pretty much landlocked, and as new people came in here that were not familiar with a more historic area of the city, they were not as familiar with how to get down there to the area that the hospital was located to get services. It was not as accessible to them as the current location is.
They do have so much more room on the new campus.
Yeah,
and I've taken a tour of it, and I know you've sure probably been in it numerous times.
Yes,
but when the MTMC personnel were directing us through it, they showed us how each room is for only one person.
Yes.
You know, I don't know how many total beds they have, but there's only one patient per room with sliding glass doors. And the amount of area space within the room, especially for a family member to stay overnight,
yes,
if necessary,
yes,
for convenient bathing facilities, room for hospital personnel to bring in whatever equipment, IVs, monitoring equipment, whatever is,
yes,
necessary. It is not only sparkling and clean just because it is brand new and because it is a hospital, but there seems to have been a considerable amount of patient-friendly thought put into the design of this new hospital.
Well, that's very true. When the last chapter of the book was being prepared, and we were looking to capture all the excitement of the opening day, but also to capture the events that was going on that decade when the decision that happened, there was about 10 years that transpired after the decision was made to move. So the hospital was having to maintain itself while planning for the future. So actually the staff was, in a sense, the senior staff had two jobs going on at the same time. And one thing that all of them would tell me during the interviews was how excited they were about the new facility, because so much time and so much thought had gone into it in the planning, and that it was going to be very patient friendly and it was going to be cutting edge. And also because of the things that I think the administrators and the senior staff had dealt with at the old hospital, of it growing in sections, there was a lot of advanced planning that's gone into this new facility, and that's in place for it to grow, because they realize that it will grow, and that, so they just didn't finish the hospital, but there was areas in the hospital where the hospital can expand too. So it's,
yeah,
very patient friendly, and a lot of thought went into the minutest little details. It was amazing to talk to all these different people, from the colors and the different areas, the paintings, the style of paintings, the beautiful art collection that's
very,
in the hospital.
Calming, very soothing.
Very much.
Nothing garish, but at the same,
right,
time, not dull and boring and,
no,
looking as though you just walked into a cinder block repository for human beings. It's obviously very well designed and decorated.
Well, the hospital is a place that people shouldn't fear. Obviously, it's not something that we necessarily want to go out and spend Sunday afternoon in, even though people are going over to the new hospital cafeteria to eat because there's great food there. But the hospital is a place of change and healing and good health. And I think all of those things that went into it, the color, the big water fountain, the wall water fountain there, the chapel, the Serenity Garden, the healing statue of Jesus, it's all meant to be a place of hope and healing and future, and the place where each room is individualized, in that it's just one. When I say individualized, they're all the same medically, but there's just one patient in there, and the focus is on that one patient. So it's a positive place. And to kind of turn the conversation back a little bit to 1927, when I read through the early clippings and the early newspaper articles that were, it was considered cutting edge. The hospital, the people that founded the hospital, which was the Commonwealth Foundation out of New York City, they made it very clear to the volunteer board of directors that they wanted that 1927 hospital to be cutting edge. It had stainless steel furniture in it. It had, in the kitchen area, it had a Dutch oven, which was a double oven, and it had its own boiler room, and they washed and did their own linens there. And it was cutting edge, being the best that you can be.
For its era.
Has been the continuing thread through the hospital for now nearly 90 years.
Now let's talk about the work you and Susan put into this project. What was it like finding the right people to interview, finding things in private collections that are not archived in public institutions? That must have been thrilling. You must have felt like you were discovering the Dead Sea Scrolls or something. These little nuggets of history that have been in somebody's photo album or whatever for years.
Well, it was very much an honor for me personally. To back up even a little bit more, you know, Susan Stump Greer grew up here, and she, her father was a businessman, and she had the initial vision for the book of wanting to commemorate this special time in the history of the hospital, and then brought me on as the researcher and writer. And so being an old journalist and having a marketing and advertising background, and also 20 years with a freelance writing, the only way that I know how to do things are to get right nose to nose, knee to knee with people, because I feel like that's where you get your story. Now, we did do some internet interviews and some emails and some telephone, because we interviewed people all the way from Oregon to Texas, all over the country. But the majority of them were done right in people's homes, around their kitchen table, around their dining room tables. So I was very humbled and very honored that these people, I shouldn't call them these people, but that the wonderful citizens of Rutherford County would open their homes and then eventually open their hearts to me and share very intimate details, personal stories, and then start digging out from their attic, under their beds, in their closets, photo albums, memorabilia, mother's scissors and nurse's hats, their stories, their pictures. There were times when I was just almost dumbstruck that these people took such ownership of this project. And I like to say that, I'm sitting here as the person in your interview, but any time that you see a turtle on top of a fence post, you know it didn't get there by itself. Right. And so it's the support of a great team, the hospital, which includes Aaron Yeldell, who is the public relations coordinator, and Susan, and all the great people in Rutherford County. The hospital is a place that serves the community. And my heart was to make and encourage the community to get on board on this project, and I think that we did that.
We are running out of time. Okay. The book is called A Time to Build Up. It's a limited edition publication.
Yes.
By Susan Greer and Patsy Weiler. And to find out more, suffice it to say, go to mtmc.org, and you'll find out more about how you might possibly obtain one of these very limited edition copies.
Yes.
Of a lovely historical publication. Patsy Weiler, thank you for being with us today.
Thank you.
This is MTSU on the Record. I'm Jenna Loeb. Join us again at the same time next Sunday. Don't forget, you can check out the podcast at your leisure at mtsunews.com, and we're available on iTunes.